Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And a special word of thanks to my friends from Arizona who are here in the delegation tonight enjoying all of the enthusiastic splendor and excitement of this marvelous night and this marvelous convention. A special greeting to the radio audience throughout America tonight. I trust that you appreciate that you have just heard the voice of a type of individual that is unfortunately, I'm afraid, becoming known as a vanishing America. What a tragedy that America is not growing literally millions of men of the caliber of Herbert Hoover. I noted one thing in particular that I think is worthy of mention here. You may have differences about many things, but it's quite obvious that you are unified on one point, and that is that our former great president, Herbert Hoover, is still a great guy. Throughout this great land of ours tonight, and along the sea lanes and frontiers of the world, where the men and women of our armed forces are holding the line against tyranny, the eyes and ears of millions of our finest citizens are hopefully tuned to the unlimited possibilities of this historic convention. In this vast and unprecedented concentration of interest, there is a tremendous yearning for a new confidence in the future of things America. If this burning fact fails to lift the Republican Party to the heights occupied by its rare and wonderful opportunity, then it deserves to be retired from the American scene for all time to come. This must not happen, and it need not happen, if we will be but completely honest in our answer to what is right for America. It is said with increasing fervor these days, America is the last hope of what is left of the free world. We could not ask for a more inspiring thought or a nobler responsibility. On the other hand, there is a growing conviction among us all that we can't possibly be equal to such a destiny until we as a people have set our house in order and raised to positions of leadership men and women of unquestionable stature whose concept of what is right for America are worthy of the finest traditions we have ever known. No nation on earth can point with greater pride to its accomplishments than can the United States of America. The credit for the enviable record we have made belongs to a system of government that has made it worthwhile for any and every citizen to be a working stockholder in one of the most successful enterprises the world has ever seen. Pride of personal ownership, the urge to build, to improve everything within reach, particularly the opportunities that are available to every deserving man, woman, and child. To think of all these things, we find in them the incentives that have made it possible for us to produce here one of the greatest establishments on earth. We are today lifted from the least of the nations of earth to one of the most amazing in history. Rounding the turn of the century, we were making 7 league strides toward a fuller maturity and the increasing wisdom that was in store for us when we collided head-on with the first of a series of shocks that continue to rock civilization to its very foundations. Only our boundless energy, unquenchable optimism, and incomparable reserves of spiritual and material strength have kept us from falling by the wayside completely. In the midst of it all, we've made mistakes. Our people have made mistakes in the midst of these trying circumstances. We made them in the 20s as a people. We made them in the 30s, the 40s, and unfortunately, we're still making them in the 50s. Unaccustomed to and bewildered by one national emergency after another, We have spent much of the last 35 years trying a little bit of everything in desperate efforts to regain our sense of balance. As is characteristic with acts of desperation, there has been very little sense to a great deal of our experimenting. Still, it probably had to be until we could settle down to the grim reality that will-o'-the-wisp experimentation and wishful thinking are not the safest answers to what is right for America. Too long, the country's leadership has placed its top priority on political expediency, and the ways and means have been so artfully disguised that we have seldom bothered to ask, what is all this doing to America? Now we're in the middle of nowhere, and still wishing that some miracle maker might erase all of our blundering overnight, lead us out into a calm and untroubled world first thing tomorrow morning without the loss of a single one of the gratuities to which we have become so accustomed. It cannot be. And furthermore, there is no man in America tonight, however wise and able, who can take us through even the opening phases of the interlude to follow without the majority support. And I repeat, the majority support of the thinking people of America. This means there will continue to be those among us who will not care a nickel's worth what happens to the country, just so they manage to get a cut of some kind. If this attitude is allowed to continue to rule the land, then again and perhaps for all time, we'll have to forget about the long, hard, but honorable climb up the hill to financial solvency and an America so fundamentally sound that it will be impregnable to the inroads of all manner of decay. And here we reach a question that must be answered with the deepest conviction and honesty, not only by this convention, but by the majority of the voters in every village, hamlet, and town throughout the country, before we can hope to settle down to the all-important business of the months ahead. That question is as simple as this. Is it worth it? Is it worth it? If you don't think so, or you're not sure, then you haven't any business in this convention. If you're right, and if you're out there in the lap of America, you have no right to citizenship, which you hold so lightly. If there is anything on earth tonight that is worthy to be saved for all time to come, it's America, as it was conceived by those who gave us our Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. Now, lest you be laboring under the illusion that our political leaders are ready with all the answers, and that the conventions can be expected to be models of perfect behavior, it should be said that there will be many things about this year's campaigning, as in the past, that you won't particularly appreciate. But whatever you do, don't allow a single seemingly unforgivable incident to so disgust and discourage you as to turn you away from the task ahead. Together we must find our way through the smoke and fire of the no man's land of this experience and those that will follow. Otherwise, the decisions that must be made if we are to keep faith with every good thing that has ever been a part of our American way of life will be in the most critical jeopardy. Your position as an adult citizen of the United States of America is so vitally important that not another moment should pass without acknowledging the indispensable role that every voter is already taking in the real-life drama of what is right for America. If this great play is to be worthy of those who will hope to replay it in the years to come, then in 1952 it must be the best possible performance, with every voter from every walk of life, including every race, color, and creed, appearing on the scene with a personal answer to what is right for America. I am confident that when those answers are read into the minutes of our meeting next November, We will see this land of ours in its finest hour, alert, intelligent, honest, and determined to protect the priceless heritage of our freedoms as the Minutemen did at Concord. I beg each and every one of you to dedicate yourselves to the kind of thinking that should be a basic part of the attitudes of the heirs of Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson, and Lee. In going beyond this convention hall to raise the challenge of what is right for America, I do so because it is time the citizens of this country are being called on for something besides the rubber stamp approval that has been virtually demanded of them in recent years. Practically every person in this country has been asked for as much as the lives of loved ones and funds beyond comprehension in support of 20 years of trying all that has been tried in a futile search for what is right for America. Why then shouldn't you be asked to give of your wisdom, to speak from your personal experience, to demand that this country act at once in defense of its own future right here at home in America. Speaking frankly again, many of us who are in government today and to a greater or lesser degree responsible for the country's political parties are deeply disturbed by the growing inclination of a vast number of voters to approach our elections with an attitude of, you'll have to give more than that if you expect to get my vote. The sad, sad thing about this point of view is that it has created a kind of competition for favor that is slowly but surely burying the right answers to what is right for America. Every public official hears above every other voice the din of those whose special interests have robbed them of a sense of obligation to anything but themselves. We are either going to change this trend beginning with our decisions in 52, or we are going to know the consequences of having demanded more than good government and honest leadership can hope to give without endangering the general welfare. Believe me, there is precious little encouragement for burning the midnight oil and the lifeblood of our most responsible and respected citizens in weighing and fighting for the right answers to what is right for America, when millions of our citizens are as busy as bees, evaluating their personal relationship with both parties, strictly on the basis of what about me and what I want. To continue such a course may be right, as some see it, in small, selfish ways. But it will be wrong for America, and finally for every American. How, oh how, can we be so agonized over foreign threats, and at the same time so immune to the more personal dangers we face in the tottering pillars of our great passion for security and independence at home, for the opportunity to seek the levels that our talents and our abilities justify, to feel the pride that goes with the knowledge that we have done well by our country. How desperately we need to recognize and act on the knowledge that political dynasties have been reared on two sides of the world in support of crisis after crisis, for which the majority of the people in each case have had no responsibility whatsoever, except for the fact that they have failed to say no to self-perpetuating and unworthy leadership. What would we wish for the communist enslaved millions of the world above every other thing? Wouldn't it be the opportunity to have the opportunity to say to the demons who plot their misery, that's all, boys, you fanned out, now it's our turn at bat. Still, for 20 years, we have failed to take advantage of the very opportunity that we wish we could give to the regimented souls of other lands.